On today's episode of Higher Learning, we are joined by Marcel Acosta Rubio, SVP and Director of Talent Development at City National Bank. Marcel spent some time with us and shared on a numerous amount of topics, including flexibility at work, learning and development, what it's like to work in the banking industry, and even tons of book recommendations. I can't wait for you to listen in on the discussion. She has so much to share and so many great insights.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid, and today we are joined by a very special guest. Today we are joined by Marcel Acosta Rubio. She is the Director of Talent Development at City National Bank. Marcel, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me here. I'm very, very excited to have this moment to talk.
I'm elated that you're here. We have so much exciting things to talk about. Let's start here. I'm very excited about the fact that you took on this somewhat unique role around talent development at City National Bank. I want to know what drew you to the company initially, and what can you tell us about the company's organizational culture?
Yeah, so actually it's a funny question. It's a funny story. I started my career in banking many, many years ago, and I actually worked for a bank here in Florida, in South Florida, in Miami, for almost 10 years. And then, actually, you know what? I'm going to take a step back because I forgot to tell you something about that part. So I actually took a job at a bank in human resources right out of college, and it was an entry-level role at a bank here in South Florida. Yep. And I was there for 10 years, and I actually did everything in HR. I had the opportunity to go through all the different, you know, areas of human resources. And then 10 years later, I took on another opportunity, and then eventually I moved away from banking. And back in 2022, they called me from City National Bank, and I came in for the interview, and, you know, the rest is history. Now I'm part of the team. But what's funny about it is that I now work with people that I work with at the very beginning of my career. Number one, I never thought I was going to go back into banking. And then number two, not only am I back in banking, but, you know, it's sort of like full circle for me because I'm working with, you know, great people that I worked at the very beginning of my journey in HR. So, you know, you asked me what I like about CNB and what drew me to the company and our culture. And I have to tell you, I really admire this bank because it's a high performing culture. You know, everybody here is very dedicated, very engaged, and always wanting to keep growing and wanting to keep learning and expanding. And that really keeps me motivated and energized. And it's something that I appreciate. So yeah, it's a great place to be. Yeah.
I love that. So my first question is, that first role that you took in banking when you were HR, were you supporting like a specific like bank office, or was it corporate, and or was it some mix of both?
Yeah, no, it was corporate. I worked for a bank that was called Gibraltar Private Bank. It's gone through different mergers, and but I was there for, like I said, for a long time. I actually started as a HR assistant. I had really no experience. I had just graduated from school, so they allowed me the opportunity to come in and be part of the team. And then I learned, right, all of the different things in HR. So like I said, I started assisting the HR director at the time, and then I was in charge of payroll. Then they made me in charge of benefits, and I moved on to being the generalist. And then at one point when we were ready to launch the training practice, I raised my hand and I said, would you mind if I do it? And my boss at the time, she was great, very supportive all the time. And she's like, of course, you know, let's go ahead and do it, which was very interesting because I got to learn a lot of the ins and outs of all of the compliance regulatory aspects of banking, because I had to train on that. And that's what actually positioned me for my next role, right, in my career. So again, it's a story I could just tell you. You know, we could spend hours talking about it because to me it's just, you know, a great story. But yeah, I worked there for 10 years and then I pivoted from banking. I actually went into a totally different industry.
You were in media, you were in a ton of different industries before you went back into banking at CNB, right?
Yeah. So I went to another bank after that one, and then I left to actually an accounting firm here in South Florida. And I was there in a very interesting project. And that's when they called me from HBO Latin America. So then I went on to work for HBO. That was a totally different, obviously, pivoted
Yeah,
away
how
from.
big of a change was that going from financial to just a completely different industry in media? Was that like, is HR across different industries, or was there some ramp up time for you
Yeah,
in
you know
media?
that's you know, I love the fact that you asked that question because I remember that when who became my boss at HBO called me for the interview, we actually went to lunch and we were talking and I told him, listen, I have never worked in media. I know nothing about the industry, but I know about HR and my skills are transferable. So if you allow me the opportunity to get to know the industry and to, you know, close that learning curve, I'm sure I can do a great job. And yeah, it was great. I mean, I had a great time at HBO. It eventually became WarnerMedia actually during the pandemic, which was crazy. But it was a very, very, you know, rewarding experience. And I remember when I started working at HBO Latin America, that's when the last season of Game of Thrones was going on. So I remember going to the master control, you know, studio or location and seeing everything in action and live. And it was fun. It was really fun.
Amazing. So are you saying last season because you're taking no responsibility for that last season and how it went, or is that why you said that?
I
You had
take
nothing to
no
do with that.
responsibility. I had nothing to do with the ending of it. You know, I support it from the HR standpoint.
You know, what's exciting is I've talked to a lot of people who are at HBO Latin America at that time, people who are on the technology side, people who are on the marketing side, and invariably we always get into Game of Thrones conversations because for me, that was the greatest show that's ever existed. It was an event show for me and my wife, and I used to every Sunday night get excited to have a glass
Oh,
of
yeah.
wine and just so into the characters, so into everything. And then I remember that last season, I was actually one of the people that was like, no, it's not that bad. You don't get it. Like, I know the episodes are a little darker, and I know there was a Starbucks cup there. And then finally we got to the end, and I just like was like, wait a minute, what just happened here? You totally ruined my favorite show. And it was such a bad ending that I can't even properly give it like credit for how good it was for so many years. So HBO, Game of Thrones, Benioff Weiss, you guys had to have done better on that one. We're gonna need a rewrite of that
I
last season
know.
so we can end it in a way that makes better sense. All right, that's my Game of Thrones tangent. I know it's not a Game of Thrones podcast, but I had to say that. I had to get that out into the ether. So I'm so interested about that because you were in banking, went into the media side, and then you went back into banking, right? And I'm just interested because you talked a little bit about CNB and their high performance culture. I know how you got into talent development now. You raised your hand, you got the opportunity, you started
Yeah.
building out a bunch of L&D, but it's got to mean something to be at a company where the culture is about high performance, right? And talent development has to be a very important strategic role. So I'm just very interested, what is that? How does that work at CNB? Do they give it that level of importance? And then kind of how does it fit into the strategy of being a high performance culture?
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I always say is that in L&D and, you know, in my team, we actually see it differently, right? It's not just training for the sake of training. We do training for the business and with the business. We're really embedded into the way in which we operate. And then our job in our training department is to take the strategy and turn it into action items that we can teach in the classroom, right? And give our bankers and our employees the right set of tools to be able to then go ahead and do the job, you know, that they need to do to be able to meet those outcomes and meet that strategy. So really we look at training from a strategic perspective. I always tell the people in my team that our job is not in the training room. Our job is what happens before the training, during the training, and after the training, right? So we really need to be part of the business. We need to embed ourselves in how we're doing things. Again, we partner, you know, with our different stakeholders, internal clients. So yeah, we have a different approach when it comes to really adding value to the business from a training standpoint. And we
Let's
created,
talk about that.
yeah.
Take us behind the curtain there, because you're talking about how you're not doing training for training's sake, that you're aligning it to business objectives. How do you do that? Like, is it by meeting with the business and understanding what they want? Is it understanding like what are strategic like learning areas and opportunities, and you get out in front of that? Like, how do you make sure that you line up with the business so that you're not just doing training for training's sake and actually doing it in a way that's actually going to help the business perform?
Yeah, no, it's exactly how you said it. I mean, we do keep very close to the business internally in HR. We, you know, work closely also with the HR business partners. We have that connection, right? And the people that are part of the training team also are very well Yeah, I guess the right word is connected. They're very much connected and in sync with the business itself. We participate in meetings in which, you know, we have insight into what the business is going through, the different initiatives that are taking place. We're also very closely to our strategy department, so we can understand from a, you know, or have more insight into the different things that from a strategy standpoint we need to accomplish. So it's a lot of that. It's a lot of communication. Our CHRO is also very much involved in this process. So it is an intentional approach to not just work in silos, right? But to be exposed to the different areas that we support from a training and development standpoint. And actually, I was going to tell you, because one of the things that we have internally, we recently launched what we call the CMB Academy. Hmm. And it is really a framework in which we provide a learning ecosystem that it's built on 8 pillars. And they're all very much embedded into how we do business, you know, specific to who we are, the clients that we have, and the processes that we have in place.
Yeah, I just love to hear about an organization that is invested in that, both literally and figuratively, in terms of understanding how important professional development is for the different employees, and then making sure it's tying back to what you're trying to accomplish as an organization. I think I want to give major kudos to City National Bank and leadership there for putting the importance on that, and then putting great, smart people in charge of it and letting that kind of run and see how that helps the business grow. So I think that's amazing. I have a question for you though, and it's a little bit of a curveball, but as I think about learning and development, right? Mm-hmm. We all learn differently, right? Some of us do better in a classroom. Some of us do better through doing it on our own time. Some of it do better through experience, what have you, right? Testing. There's a lot of different ways that we all learn, but you've got to make decisions for the organization overall as a whole, right? So how do you try to figure out the best way that people intake information, how to retain? Like, are you doing anything on an individual or collective basis to kind of modify that? Or is it kind of like one standard, one structure for everybody, and this is how we do it?
No. So we rely a lot on feedback. We ask for a lot of feedback after our different training sessions and as we go building training content, right, and training programs. So we keep that very much top of mind. We go to the clients, our internal clients, our employees, and we ask. Interestingly enough, our people really like their preferred way is in person, right? Because there's something to be said about having the ability to be in a classroom with, you know, a person and interacting and asking questions. And then also it allows for internal sharing of best practices and networking. But we do have different options. Again, we're a very busy organization. Everybody here is concerned and not concerned, but focused on making sure that, you know, we meet our goals and that we stay on track. So we also need to be cognizant of that. So of course we offer things, you know, in a virtual modality. We try to make sure that sometimes if it's a big course, we break it down into pieces and we allow for people to take it at different times, you know. Again, we work with the business to make sure that what we're doing, number one, is conducive to a good experience. And then number two, it aligns with their schedules and, you know, their preferred way of receiving that content. But yes, it's not a one size fits all. You have to constantly assess and reassess and get to the feedback. I think that's important.
I love that. So I want to talk a little bit about hiring. You've obviously done a lot of hiring throughout your career. So I'll start here. My first question is, do you have a core hiring philosophy for when you're bringing somebody into your team or something that kind of rings throughout your head whenever you're interviewing and having people join?
You know, I always look for people that are solution oriented. Sometimes you may not have all the answers, but if you have the willingness to look for those answers and be resourceful, you can really add value. So that's one element that I know it's hard to detect in an interview sometimes, but I usually ask questions around that, right? It's funny because when I worked at HBO that eventually became Warner Media, I became part of a group that was called the People Solutions Team. And I love that name because that's really my philosophy, right? Like, I'm here to provide solutions. So I would say that's my philosophy, collaboration, a lot of collaboration here in my, you know, in my team. We obviously have our different roles and things that we are responsible for, but at the end of the day, we roll up our sleeves and we help each other, and that goes a long way, and it's, you know, a very important element to have. So yeah, I would say that's my philosophy when it comes to hiring.
Love that philosophy. I think that's awesome. What about a memorable interview experience? If I asked you to recall a memorable interview experience, maybe it was when you were interviewing or you were interviewing somebody. What comes to mind?
You know, I remember, I would never forget, I used to work for a bank. And one of the executives in that institution had a very particular way of interviewing. And I sat in some of those interviews. So after he, you know, went through the resume and talked about skills and experience and all of that, then he would give you like a list of different like elements, like, for example, flexibility, career aspiration, financial aspirations. You know, like he had a number of things that he would put on the table, and then he would ask you to rank them. So then at the end, what he would do is that depending on your answers, right? So like, for example, if, you know, work-life balance was very important to you and the company needed, you know, somebody to be extremely committed to the work and maybe, you know, the work-life balance was going to suffer a little bit, then like he would go through how the culture of the organization aligns with your own values. And it was, you know, a different way of interviewing, but I think at the end of the day, it really made for a good experience because the candidate was able to know right from the beginning what the company needed and how the values that he or she had aligned with the culture. So it was interesting. I had never seen that before. I haven't been able to do that type of interview, but he had a way of, you know, making sure that that process was one that was valuable to the employee or the potential candidate.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, as we go into an interview process, we're talking about a lot of those things. We're trying to make sure there's alignment there. And really what he was doing was making what was implicit and unsaid explicit and said. And so I'm sure that, you know, he got a lot of good results out of that as an outcome. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't be doing it. And probably catches people a little bit off guard to have to be able to list those priorities, but oh, yes. I think it's really important for individuals to do that and to understand what's important to them. And then it's just a matter of, does this fit? Does this work or not? So I think that's awesome. I love that story.
Yeah. It was, you could see a lot of reactions, right, from people when he went into, okay, now rank this in a scale from 1 to 10, but it was great. It was great. Now I'll tell you another thing that happened, not to me, but it happened to somebody that I worked with recently, which I thought it was both interesting and scary at the same time, is that we had somebody interviewing a potential candidate. And then the hiring manager, you know, is asking questions, but then he realizes that something is a bit off, right? Like, I don't know, the interview, the responses sounded very scripted, very, a little off. So I guess he noticed, and he goes to the candidate and he says, I'm going to ask you a question now, but I want you to close your eyes and I want you to answer me with your eyes closed. So when he went to give the answer, the candidate, he didn't really have much to say. It turns out that apparently this individual had some sort of AI application that was listening into the questions and was kind of providing an answer that he could read back, right? So I thought, you know, the minute that obviously we found out, it was interesting because now with all of this new technology, which is great for so many things, but we also need to make sure that we know how to use it and that then, you know, when it comes to us that we're in the process of, you know, screening candidates and going through the interview process, we need to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, technology can also do this type of thing. So there's nothing like having the opportunity to interview somebody in person, you know, really, really having the space to hone on those skills, to ask those questions, because it's interesting what all of this is doing now with AI.
Sure. I mean, I guess part of you could say that, well, they know how to use AI, and that's obviously going to be something important going forward. But there's also some level of disingenuousness there that probably would disqualify the person for the role. It's funny because I actually gave a talk on artificial intelligence and hiring and where we're at now and where it's going a couple of weeks ago. And I brought up as an example that candidates are using AI in a lot of different ways to try to gain advantages. And one of which is actually in interviews using AI off to the side and being able to read through answers. And I promise you, when I said this, everyone's like, no, you'd be able to tell that in this scenario. And I'm like, trust me, I'm telling you, I've heard many stories about this recently coming up. And it's much more common than people think. So the technology is there. I think it was a great move by the hiring manager to tell them to close their eyes and see what happened. And people got to be careful if they're going to try to take advantage of these tools and represent themselves as something that they're not. You're going to get found out sooner or later, right? So I don't even know why you'd go about doing it, but I guess some people are just going to be desperate to do what they want to do to get the job that they want. But yeah, we've got to be aware that these tools are there, and as interviewers, it's more important than ever to be able to discern what's real and what's not. So I think that's a great story. What about a favorite question? Do you have a favorite question that you love to ask in interviews?
So there's this question that I think it's very powerful. When you ask somebody, what does that successful day look like, right? Because it allows you to, depending on the answer, you can determine if it's somebody that it's, very much process driven, or if they have an inclination towards maybe, client service first. I think it's a very telling question. So that's one that I use. I also like to ask, what's one thing that you are really, really good at, and then something that you would like to improve, right? Because it goes to show that the person has self-awareness. I mean, we all have our strengths and we have our areas of opportunities. So I think it's important to allow somebody to kind of share how self-aware they are. So I think that's a very powerful question. And then, when I talk to somebody, when I'm interviewing somebody for a specific role, right, I usually like to ask, what do you think about, let's say, banking, right? What do you think? What's your take on the industry right now, on our industry? Tell me, how do you see, what's your biggest challenge, and how do you overcome those challenges? Because I think then it goes to show if the person really knows about, the industry that they work in, and if they are in tune with what goes out there, what goes on out there, and if they also have that solution-driven mentality, right? That despite challenges in the industry or in your field of work, you think about how do you add value, how do you turn it around, how can you sort of like overcome those challenges? So those are some of my top questions.
Love that. Lots of good questions. Anybody who's going to interview with you knows a couple that are going to come their way now if they listen to this pod. So those are some
That's
really good
true.
questions.
That's true.
That's okay. We'll come up with some new ones for you. I love the self-awareness. I think it's really important to get an understanding of what somebody's strengths and what they perceive their weaknesses to be. And I think the way you frame it is really smart. So I really like that. What about, all right, I got a little curveball for you again here. If I asked you to recall the best hire you've ever made, is there something that comes to mind, somebody that comes to mind, and why?
Let's see. I mean, I do have a lot of people that I'm very proud that have been part of my team.
You don't got to name names, by the way. You can just describe them.
I won't say names. But it's definitely, again, having that ability to be collaborative, to be resourceful, and just to have a, yes, I can attitude. I mean, for me, that speaks volumes. I remember that I used to work with a CEO that said, we can learn skills, but look for somebody that really has the drive, right? So hire for culture, hire for drive, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to take you to the next level. Again, for me, it's about just coming to work with a positive attitude, with the right attitude, because we're always going to have things that are going to, get in the way, and days are going to be difficult, and clients are going to be difficult. But if you just look at it from the standpoint of this is a learning opportunity, I think that makes all the difference. So yes, those individuals that have that, you know, attitude are the ones that I look forward to working with.
Yeah. What about from a technology perspective when you're hiring? Do you use any technology to assist? Obviously, you're probably not using AI to ask questions like the candidate you mentioned was, but like, what do you see for technology with regards to hiring? Is there anything in the space that you love working with, or are you just scribbling notes when you're taking an interview? What do you leverage to help you in the process?
You know, we're very traditional, you know, still when it comes to our hiring, recruiting, interviewing process. Obviously, we have technology that we leverage for, you know, tracking applicants and all of that good stuff. But again, right now we just, you know, we take notes. We obviously debrief, you know. We usually, more than one person would interview the candidate, and then there's an internal process of debriefing. But other than that, we're very traditional still in the way in which we interview and how we handle that.
I love that. What about when you miss on somebody? Because we've all made misses. Do you look back and is there like a theme that you can recall that, I wish I would have done this? Or is there any type of bias that maybe comes up for you more often than not that you didn't realize until too late?
You know, I think it's really, I can think of two things. We all say it, and I know that many, many people think this way. You know, you always have that instinct, right? So it's like, oh, I don't know, if you're not 100% sold, you know, pay attention to that. I'm not saying that you're going to disqualify the person because of that, but I think you have to take the time to dig deeper until you feel comfortable, right? I think whenever you hire somebody, but you still have that little intuition telling you there's something off, oftentimes, you know, you're right. And then the other thing that I have noticed, at least for me personally, is that if I don't prepare for the interview, the result may not be as good, because you need to know what you're hiring for. You need to know, you know, what the role entails. Again, to your point, the technical skills, the soft skills. So you kind of have to prepare for that. You know, you need to identify who is it that you need in your team. And then you need to ask questions around that, because if we're just going to have a conversation, just, you know, to spend an hour talking to somebody, that's great. But it's really not going to help you really, you know, pinpoint those elements that you need, you know, to come in and help your team. So I think for me, it's those two. It's really paying attention to your intuition, but it is also preparing. I think a lot of times we wing it, you know, we're busy. Oh, I know how to interview. I've done it many, many times. But then I think you should treat every interview, with dedication, with, you know, you got to prepare, and it also shows, you know, respect to the whole process. So
I think those two things go hand in hand too. If you're preparing, right, then your intuition is more likely to be accurate if you've taken the time ahead of time. So
yeah,
totally aligned with you on that. Let me ask you a little bit of a different take here. Is there anything you're working on right now that you're really, really excited about at City National Bank?
Well, yeah. So like I mentioned a little bit ago, we just launched what we call the CMB Academy. And we're very excited about that, because it really, you know, we are looking at, like I said, training and development at CNB as something that is part of our strategy. And it's just as important to be able to prepare our bankers and our employees to do their best work possible. So we created a framework, and it's, like I said, it's built on 8 pillars. And, you know, there's anything and everything from systems to compliance to sales to credit. So there's a lot of things that are part of our curriculum. And happy to say that we launched it last year, and more to come. But it's a very important initiative that we're doing. And honestly, I have an amazing team, you know, experience. They have the credibility of the business. You know, they're just great at what they do. So that's exciting. That's very exciting.
That always makes things better and easier. That's awesome. You're going to have to keep us up to date on that, how rollout and how it goes. What about Have you read a good book recently that you want to recommend, or any content you've seen recently? Maybe it was on HBO that you want to recommend for our listeners?
So actually, there's a book that I love. I read it a while ago, but it's still very, very relevant. And it's called The Power of Moments. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No, I've never
It's
heard of that.
by Dan and Chip Heath, I think it's how you pronounce your names. Amazing book. Amazing book. I recommend it to anybody, The Power of Moments. And then there's obviously, I'm a follower of Simon Sinek. You know, I listen to all of his TED Talks and all of his books. And during the pandemic, I read The Infinite Game, which we actually did a book club with my team when I was at HBO. You have it? You have it there? There you go. Of course.
Great book. Go ahead. So you're at a book club. We have a book club too. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so you know, when COVID hit and everybody was like overwhelmed and tired and exhausted and worried, I told my team, this was back in HBO. I said, you know what? Let's pick a book. Let's read it. And then once a week, we're going to get together over Zoom and we're going to talk about, you know, a couple of chapters. So we went with The Infinite Game. And it was such a good book to read during that time because, as you know, as you've read it, it talks about how to, you know, reinvent yourself and stay relevant and make sure that, again, you adapt. And that was a perfect moment to adapt. So it was a great book. And again, I had the best memories because we read it together as a team.
Awesome.
So yeah, those two. And then I listen to all sort of podcasts. Adam Grant is another one that I follow and I listen to. Yeah, I just
He's got a
I
great book called Think Again. He actually had another one
again.
that recently came out, but Think Again's a great book, and I have to pick up his new one. I'm forgetting the name of it right now, but
I haven't read it yet, but I will. I do a lot of audiobooks because I commute, so it's a way to kill time while I'm in the car.
all right, last question. If you had to give 20-year-old Marcel a bit of advice, career advice, that you didn't know then, but that you know now, what would you say?
I've thought about this question in the past, and I think it's definitely to not second guess myself so much. You know, I think early on in our careers, at least I suffer from having a little bit of fear of failure. So not until I was totally prepared, not until I knew exactly what I, you know, I'm feeling prepared and ready. Not until then would I do things, and I think I missed out on perhaps on opportunities because I didn't think I was ready. And no, now going back and looking back, I'm like, that's just not a good practice, right? Because at the end of the day, it's never going to be perfect, and you don't strive for perfection; you just strive for progress. And that's how you go learning. So you have to allow yourself to make mistakes, to treat yourself with grace, and just know that that's part of the learning process. So yeah, I tell that to my kids. So hopefully
Good
they'll
advice. I
learn.
listen to it. Yeah, you got
Yeah.
to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. Usually, if you're uncomfortable, that's usually a good sign that
Yeah.
it's something that you got to keep pushing on. And that's how you achieve great things, is when you're doing things that you haven't done before and don't stick with the status quo. So
Exactly.
stay
Yeah, and
confident in
then
yourself.
of
Go ahead.
course, and then you look back and you realize that you knew how to do it, you know? So it's all a matter of again, to your point, putting yourself, you know, out of your comfort zone and trusting that you're able and capable.
Totally agree. Marcel, that's amazing advice. Listen, I really appreciate you coming on. I really enjoyed the conversation. You got a lot of exciting things going on at CMB. Congrats on the recent addition to the job with culture. I look
Yeah.
forward to staying in contact and keeping the conversation going. Thanks for coming on.
No, thank you. It was great. Have a good one.
Have a good one. Bye.